Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Happy Monday, Cleveland! NBA free agency is officially underway and, may I say, relatively active. I didn't realize you were going to get a ton of things on day one. We got a pretty decent amount. We have rumors floating around on day one. The Guardians are taking on the Texas Rangers today. We'll react to that game when it's over. And the NFL, all intents and purposes, relatively quiet. I hope Anthony Alliant locked down the Thursday and Friday when I was gone. Jax, can you attest?
Friday was very good until the last hour. It got a little out of hand, but that's okay. It was a Friday.
You just lose it entirely? What happened? And then you just go off the rails?
Just a lot of... I might have aided a bit to it a little bit, but it's okay.
As a good board op does. Way to be out there, Jax. Round of applause to Jax Gregory for throwing it off the rails the way it should be. No, I'm sure Anthony locked things down. We're back. Back from my sister's wedding. A lot of stories to tell from that wedding. A lot of those which will not be said over the air. Some of which will. I can tell you the fact that, my girlfriend decided to burn me with a steamer. That happened. I mean, that was fun. Jack saw the injury. There's a nice gaping burn sitting on my thigh from a pair of pants and trying to be steamed while they were on me. Wasn't a smart decision at the time. Certainly wasn't a smart decision by the end of it. It hurt. We were angry at each other for about 30 seconds, and then it hurt for the entire weekend. So that was not a very enjoyable time. And I am very glad today to know that I do my job sitting in a chair. That is really nice because if I had to go out there and do physical labor today, just wouldn't be fun. Like, I'd get through it. It's not like excruciating pain, but wouldn't be fun. Like,
if you're outside and you're sweating and that's rubbing against it, that would not be good.
That would not, no. No, I mean, it was bad enough taking a shower before work today. It hurt bad enough where I was like, yeah, this shower could be over faster. And letting sweat get into it, moving around. I mean, we're like walking into a heat advisory at the end of today into tomorrow. It wouldn't have been a good combination. So, again, very glad that I get to sit here today. This is nice. We get to sit in the nice air conditioning. We get to talk about sports. By the way, it is Jake Volnick with you guys here from 7 to 11. Jax Gregory is on the board, and you heard Mackenzie Flume on the 2020s doing work behind the glass. I do want to start today, though, in talking about what I view as probably the biggest NBA story floating around right now. And obviously, it doesn't necessarily directly involve the Cavs, but anytime you talk about LeBron this offseason before he signs to a team, it indirectly relates to the Cavs. Because I still think, despite the many of efforts I have made to tell everybody that we should give up on this idea, it is a pipe dream. I have people on social media. I think even our good friend Danny Cunningham was laying out the fact that LeBron is a member to multiple golf courses in the area, especially right around Akron, which I do have to remind everybody, he did grow up here. There is, I'm sure, family remaining in the area. He does come back to visit every once in a while. It's not that odd for a guy that has become obsessed with golf to be a member of a golf course, especially, like, if Jax told me, oh, I'm a member at a golf course in California, I'd look at Jax and be like, Jax, when are you moving? Okay, like, you can just break the news now. When are you going? Where is it? When it's LeBron, LeBron probably has a golf course that he's a member of in, like, half the cities across America. Not that impressive when it's here. But, obviously, the big things coming out from today, centering around what sounds like legitimacy to the rumors that float out there about LeBron and potentially going to Golden State, pairing up with Steph, pairing up with Draymond. Jax, you told me before the show, did we get this pairing up with Kristaps Porzingis again?
Yeah, he returned to the Warriors.
Okay, absolutely terrible. Don't know what we're doing. Why Kristaps has just become the journeyman of the NBA at the end of this, which he's still not even like a god-awful player. Like, he's not journeyman-level caliber, but he just manages to be on a different team every year. So there you go. That, I guess, is like somewhere surrounding your starting five. Steph, LeBron, Draymond, Anthony Davis has to be a part of this, and Kristaps.
Draymond did decline his option today.
I assume.
The Warriors weren't expecting that to happen.
That's what they say. It's got to be to open up some money, some flexibility, right? Draymond comes back on a cheaper deal. I mean, what? He was owed like 27 point something million dollars inside of this option.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with a Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I don't think anybody on the planet expects Draymond to be worth $27 million. I'm sure they probably came to him like, hey, Draymond, you're not worth $27 million. We could use some cap flexibility if you want to be competitive. And I'm sure the overarching thought was, yeah, Draymond's going to opt into this because what guy doesn't take $27 million on the table at the age that he's at while he still obviously has, I mean, a ridiculously large ego. Yeah, I probably would have expected Draymond to take that too. So, I don't know. Maybe Draymond's not coming back. Maybe that's not the end of the world even for the Warriors. Really don't think he's been that effective if we're talking about the last couple of years. But you talk about, obviously, all of this floating around. And Shams had a report earlier today on ESPN detailing the only way LeBron is actually making his way to Golden State. Let's take a listen.
The Warriors in the last several days formulated a grand plan of putting together a big four of Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. But in order to do that, they needed the flexibility of Draymond Green opting out of his contract, $27.7 million opt-out. There was an expectation in the last week, several weeks, that Draymond Green would be opting in, but he's now opting out. And so AD and LeBron James would have to be a package deal in order to come to Golden State and team up with Green and Steph Curry. And in this sequencing of events, Draymond Green would opt out, as he did, to take a multi-year deal at less than $27 million a year. AD would require a trade of Jimmy Butler and draft capital, and then that would mean LeBron James potentially at the mid-level exception. So now they are trying to do something big here again, and it started with Draymond Green opting out today.
So, like, I mean, listen, if somebody came to me and was like, hey, get LeBron to join the station, all you got to do is opt out of your contract, take a little bit less money. I'm going to take that option. All right. LeBron wants to join overtime. I can take a little bit of a pay cut for that if I get to do a show next to LeBron every day. Draymond's probably in a similar scenario. You're telling me I actually have a chance at this thing? Because we can be honest about it. Like, the Warriors sitting in their current state in the West have absolutely zero chance to compete. I think everybody in Golden State currently knows that. This is something that obviously gets them closer. But I think about the proper reaction to this, and I think I had it in real time when it happened. Like, I know people, they rally back on this, said, oh, LeBron can't join up with Steph Curry. He can't go back to Golden State. Those are just things you don't do. Jordan wouldn't have done that. I don't care if LeBron goes to Golden State. Like, honestly, I brought a championship here. He got you a ring. Would I love for him to come back to Cleveland? I absolutely would. It would be nice. Am I holding him to it? Do I expect it to happen? No.
That's too far from me. That would hurt entirely too much.
Like, what is the hurt?
What do you mean? What, they prevented him from winning three more rings.
Yeah.
And then you just go and play with that guy. Like, I get.
They're friends. They played on Team USA together.
I get that, but any team except that team. Literally any team except that team.
Like, I got one out of it. Would I have liked to have four out of it? Yeah, I absolutely would have. It's not like LeBron came back to Cleveland and they were like, all right, let's go get KD, Giannis, and somebody else to counter the super team. They built up a team at the exact same time. It's a dynasty. I don't like the Warriors. Don't like Draymond. I mean, I've grown to hate Steph Curry less as the years have gone on and we've been removed from it. Still not like he's my favorite player in the world. You can respect him at the same time. But I think part of it is because, okay, LeBron's going to go to Golden State, and what are my expectations? Nothing. Like, I don't think Golden State accomplishes anything. You're telling me you get LeBron, Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green. That team is going to miss more games in their starting lineup than they are going to play. Like, that is the reality of it. Anthony Davis, I mean, we have certainly not patented the name, certainly not came up with it, but use it fairly frequently here every time we talk about him. That's Anthony Data Davis, okay? That man doesn't play basketball during the regular season, and I'm sure as hell not counting on him in the postseason. Steph has been injured over the last couple of years, hasn't played full seasons, has obviously gotten older. Draymond, I mean, I don't even know what he accomplishes on the floor anymore. He's not an elite defender. He's not an elite facilitator. He's like an all right role player that is still going to be played higher than one. And yeah, LeBron is still great. He displayed it this year in the playoffs. But like, this is a type of team you build, and I go, man, If it was 2014, this team would win 15 straight titles and they never break up. It's 2026. We're like 12 years removed from the prime of this lineup. Okay, maybe you say 2016, 2017, maybe the prime of the lineup. Either way, we are almost a decade, if not more than, removed from what is the prime of this lineup. Golden State has been building a retirement home for the last half decade and have won a championship doing it. Props to them. But especially post their, 2022 title run, they have gone full retirement mode. They've brought in Kristaps. They brought in Jimmy Butler. Like, they have tried 9 different combinations of aging superstars who just don't work. I don't see this as much different. Are they better than those teams? Yeah, of course they're better than those teams. Like, if that's the way LeBron decides he wants to roll out his career, doing it in the San Francisco area, all right, man, like, have fun. It's a Western Conference team. You're not directly competing against me. We have our own things to worry about here. And yes, again, LeBron fixes a lot of those problems. LeBron helps, but there is nothing me holding to the idea that, one, I even think LeBron is still going to end up here. And two, at this point, I should care what he does with the finale of his career as a Cavs fan. As an NBA fan, as somebody who is a LeBron fan, yeah, of course I care. But as a Cavs fan, go do what you want to do. Again, you came back and delivered on your promise. You are going to bring a championship to Cleveland. You don't have to do a retirement tour here. You don't have to do a retirement tour in LA or New York or anywhere else. You can pick where you want to go. And if ultimately at the end of your career, you said, I want to go try it out for a year or two, play next to Steph, play next to Draymond, bring back in the old crew of Anthony Davis and basically build out the second banana boat crew out there on the West Coast this time, have fun. There's just not a, if I thought he was building a powerhouse, a super team out in Golden State, yeah, I'd be a little upset. There'd be a bigger reaction to this. I don't even think Golden State's like that much more improved than the current LA team he's on. Like, you don't have a star at this point in their career that is at anywhere in the same capacity as Luka. Now, obviously, Luka didn't play in the playoffs. Lakers, I don't know that they really went farther if he did. And that's a team that obviously has a lot of holes to fill on the perimeter, on the outsides, kind of on the fringe. But I just don't see a lot coming of this. I don't see it being a major roadblock to the Cavs in any capacity. And I don't think that you should be banking on LeBron to use your get out of jail free card, right? You have to do this your own way. You have to do it properly if you're Kobe Altman. If LeBron comes and bails you out, that shouldn't save your career any longer. That shouldn't make you any more secure as a GM. I need to see that you can roster build. Again, would open LeBron with open arms. I would bring him right back in, no problem at all. Wouldn't tell Kobe not to do it. But there's also a part of me of like, you have to do your job. You created a mess. Go out and fix it. And we have to stop letting LeBron be the ones to bail you out. So yes, I walk away from this entire situation telling you, I think that today you only got farther away from LeBron coming back to Cleveland, and you really need to let it go. And two, it also probably shouldn't be that big of a reaction. It was unlikely to begin with, and I think Kobe Altman needs to figure out how to get this done, and there's other ways to get it done. But I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. What's the proper reaction to the Warriors' Big Four idea? Steph, Draymond, LeBron, and AD. Mine is fairly neutral. You can also get to us on X at Volnick Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C Jake. So we can get to our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Plenty of good stuff coming up for you guys tonight. The most pressing thing said by our station's guest today is going to be coming your way at 7:40 with the station buzz. Coming up a little later on in the show at 8 o'clock, we're going to talk to Ethan Sands at Cleveland.com. We'll ask him about LeBron, some other rumors floating around Cleveland, and James Harden declining his option, maybe taking more money or less money, excuse me. We'll see what plays out, if opinion on James Harden can change. All that coming up at 8. Get a Grips coming your way at 9 o'clock, as it always does. We have Guardians reaction. We'll bring in Mackenzie Flume later on in the show. Plus, again, right now, 216-474-0092. What is the proper reaction to the Warriors' Big Four idea and a rumor about one player from the Eastern Conference floating around to the Cavs might actually fix a lot of their problems? I need to know if you're interested in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick. With you guys until 11 on The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. We're asking you 216-474-0092. What is the proper reaction to the Warriors' Big Four idea? Right, again, it's Steph Curry, Draymond Green, LeBron, and Anthony Davis in no particular order, or else LeBron would have been first, I promise you. But I'm just kind of, I don't know, like, I'm very even keel about it. I don't have much of a reaction to it. There's people, Jack says it's a step too far. We talked to JP about this a couple of weeks ago. He thinks it's a step too far. I just, like, again, if you want to go play out in Golden State, at this point in your career, where we are now like 8 years removed, if you want to team up with Steph, go team up with Steph. Like, end your career any way that you want it to. I'm not the one holding out hope. But I want to hear from you guys. Let's go out to the phones and Cool Ray's in Bedford. What's going on, Cool Ray?
Hey, what's up, man? I like the idea if it's going to be a retirement tour for everybody and they get a young guy opportunity to sit and learn and play and they coach them up so when new guys leave, Golden State don't fall off. But other than that, I love it, you know, because in Cleveland, like if LeBron would have said LeBron came here, mm-hmm. and we can literally put Mobley on the bench where he belongs. Like, that's the only thing with Cleveland media and Cleveland fans is that when you say Mobley, just because they paid him a lot of money, it's like, yo, y'all know he's a bench player. Unless he comes back and shoot 40% from the arc, from the 3-point line, and make him consistently. That's our problem. We keep jamming up the middle with two big centers. We got a passive point guard. We point guard who just seems to turn the ball over every time he blinks his eyes. Got a bunch of guys who can shoot, but not shoot with be made. So, and they play slow. When do we go back to playing slow? Like that is the Cavs got so many issues that I'm glad LeBron may not come back. But it fits him because he's an older guy. He's slow. But he would give us that outside shot and that presence from that forward position that we do not have.
I mean, listen, like, Gouray, I think he fixes a lot of problems. I appreciate the call. I mean, one, the Evan Mobley thing, that's a top 25 player in the NBA, okay? We cannot be calling him a bench player.
Defense player of the year. Like,
yeah, like,
come on.
I'm not saying that, like, he's a star and he's worth the max contract that he's currently playing under. I don't have to go to that length for you. He's a starting 4 or 5 in the NBA on just about any team that you buy. Boston has high desire for a guy, for a team that just won a championship a couple of years ago and were playing without their star for the playoffs, end of the playoffs last year, and almost the entirety of the season this year. For them to go out and be like, oh, let's go get a big, and the second name they target is Evan Mobley, I think it probably tells you he's at least starting quality. And I would go, again, a step above that. He is a top 25 player in the NBA. But, yeah, I mean, it's nice if LeBron goes here. If he wants to go out on the retirement tour and do that and all those guys want to go do it, sure, have fun. Again, I don't think they're going to go with your thought process here. And yet, Yaxel Lendenberg is the guy that they're bringing up. Pods. I think that they're pretty much trying to put together a 10-year, two-old super team and think they can go out on top and win a title one more time, and they're ready to devastate their franchise after you know, it's all said and done. But I don't care what Golden State does. Like, again, if you want to throw it back to the early 2000s Golden State, the We Believe Warriors and all of those guys, yeah, sure, have fun. Like, you go out there, you enjoy it, you're not going to get much out of it. But I just don't have a heavy liking to it. And again, maybe the reason why I'm not overly concerned about it is because I think the Cavs have to fix their own roster their own way. Like, I am not in the Kobe Altman gets the LeBron bailout card again. You have a roster that should be talented enough to go win. You have switched out the coach. You have switched out everything. You are actively redoubling down into the fact you think Donovan Mitchell can go win a title. And you think he can be the best player on a title team. I need to see it with my own two eyes then. You have to go and prove it to me and show to me that you can actually build that and that it wasn't banked on, no, LeBron's going to come back and he's going to save the day. I don't think that was in their initial plans. But I need to see that you actually have the thought process to go through that. And over the weekend, Brian Windhorst was on Hoop Collective and was talking a little bit about the Cavs and their aggressiveness, and then individually talks about a couple of guys that have been key parts of this roster for the last couple of years.
The Cavs look like they might lose a player or two. I'm not sure they're going to be able to keep Dean Wade. They may have to trade another piece. You know, Max Strus has been sort of a little bit available. They may be trying to do an upgrade with the trade there. I think the Cavs might have been involved a little bit, I heard. in the Miles Bridges discussions. So maybe, you know, but I don't think you're seeing a major addition to the Cavs. I could be wrong.
So Wendy goes and says that this weekend, and we get a report earlier today from Jake Fisher saying that the Cavs are at least showing interest in Jonathan Kuminga, who declined his player option this year to go play for the Hawks again. On a team that, I mean, ultimately it looked like for at least a few games he was going to be better. He only played 16 games in a Hawks uniform, played 15 of those off the bench, averaged like 12 points while he was there, which was essentially what he was averaging in Golden State while he was actually playing, but obviously didn't spend a whole lot of time playing. And he had a couple of nice games. I mean, he went out there and dropped like 24. He dropped 15 in the playoffs. He's averaging about 14 against New York. I mean, there's things that I think are relatively exciting about Jonathan Kuminga, but this is actually the type of move where I think I give Kobe Altman a little bit of credit. I show some interest in what you can actually do for me, because Kuminga is one of the more interesting players that I think are available and on the market right now. You have to go show me what can actually happen, what I can see. And I think bringing me Kuminga, who does fill your slot, is a wing player, a guy that you've been missing. He's not your typical 3-and-D guy. He's actually just about neither of those things. He's a pretty okay defender. Plays a little bit better, I think, in the role that he was suited in Atlanta than the one he was suited in Golden State, where they ask him to basically play the 5 or the 4. I think he can be kind of a flex between a 3 or 4. He is a true forward. He can help you out a little bit on the boards. He is a big enough body, 6'7". He is a true guy to go defend the wing, even if he is not an elite defender. But these are the type of moves that I like to hear about. This is what actually interests me, because I think there are names that you have to consider letting go. I think Dean Wade is one of those. I think that Max Strus is one of those. I don't know that those are guys that you can double down onto and be like, hey, they're coming back. We can afford to have them. We're going to make it happen. These are the type of guys that I think are relatively, maybe Dean Wade not as much, but relatively replaceable. Dean Wade just not replaceable on this roster because you don't have anybody else that stands at 6'9" and can play defense. Dean's kind of the only guy that fills that, but I mean, I've been staring at Max Strus with a top-heavy contract that's about 2.5 times what Sam Merrill's getting paid, and going, what do you do for me that Sam Merrill doesn't? Like, you play a little bit better defense, I'll give that to you. You do have, I mean, NBA playoff experience a lot more than a lot of the guys on this team. But I'm not bringing you on to, like, be the savvy veteran to hang out and do things. I have guys. I brought in James Harden to this team. That's playoff experience, even if it's not championship experience. I have guys who have been on playoff rosters. Thomas Bryant got, you know, re-inked to a deal today, which I think was basically based off of nothing except for the fact that I can put a big man on my roster who's not very expensive, because Thomas Bryant didn't really play a crucial role for this team, although I guess a positive impact in the locker room is about the best thing I can say. But the Cavs are in a position right now where you turn around and look and say, okay, you need to go out and get somebody who's not going to cost you a boatload of money. I don't know. That seems like it could potentially be Jonathan Kuminga. I think there will be a market for him. I think teams will be interested. But Kuminga is the type of guy that you can go out and say, hey, I mean, he's not going to get paid what he once was thought he was going to get paid in Golden State. He does have to go up a little bit more on a prove it, especially after going to Atlanta, not showing that he's an elite player. And you can bring him in on a little bit cheaper, but with a high upside kind of deal. I can look at Jonathan Kuminga and say, okay, that's a guy who could slot in as a starting 3 for me. He is going to give me something offensively. He's not going to be terrible defensively. Right? I can bring you in what you top out on my roster is a really nice player to play alongside at least all of, if not a majority of the core 4. At the very downside of it, you're a guy who can average 12 points a game, which is more than Dean Wade was averaging, and I can trust you to play the starting 3, and if I have to, I can play you in the DeAndre Hunter role. I can bring you off the bench. Like, I am in a perfect scenario to bring in high upside players at a very low value. The Cavs are in the second apron, right? They should be under it. I mean, James Harden declining his player option, I think, technically brings them under the second apron. They are allowed to technically make moves now outside of the veteran minimum moves. But obviously, you're going to have to factor that back in. He is going to sign a multi-year deal. He's not going anywhere. But I can work this into, again, I need to bring in players. This team needs to find ways to get additions, and they cannot be overly expensive. You don't have a ton of expenses to cut on the roster. The couple of guys that, you know, Wendy named in that clip, and Dean Wade and Max Strus are some of the, I mean, not even massive contracts that you are able to cut and maybe still make something out of. But this is also where I look at a player where it is everything I have asked Kobe Altman to do this offseason. Bring me in a player who doesn't do something that is currently on the team. I am sick of seeing 6'5 guards that play scrappy defense that can shoot threes. Like, I'm asking them to guard the best defender every time they're on the floor. I have Sam Merrill. I have Max Strus. I had Keon Ellis. It's like, why did Keon Ellis not play in the playoffs? Because he was basically the picture representation of, I have Max Strus and Sam Merrill. Go out there and do their role. They just played the guy they trusted more. Like, I can only put so many Keon Ellis's on one team, so many Max Strus's on one team. Kobe needs to show me roster building. The fact that, you know, Wendy mentions him, maybe that they were interested in Miles Bridges. That's a guy who does something different than what's on the team right now. Jonathan Kuminga is a guy who does something different. And it is one of the key pieces that you're actually missing. Go get a wing. Go get a guy that can actually be an offensive player for you on the wing. A contributing member of the offense. Not, hey, Dean, go stand in the corner. And, well, if you get the yips when you grab the ball, then probably just pass out of it. But you're going to guard the best guy on the other side of the floor, damn it. You're going to do it. Okay, I need somebody that contributes a little bit more than that. Again, do I think the fans should be up in arms, excited, and we should be throwing a party if you sign Jonathan Kuminga? No, probably not. Like, hey, this isn't some move that is going to make or break the team. But the interest alone shows me a willingness, an idea that something should be changing, that there should be some kind of adjustment in the way that you're building the roster, and you have to do something different to keep this team competitive. Because I'm with Wendy. I don't think that there's a big move waiting in the wings for the Cavs. Right? They don't have the money to do it. They don't have the flexibility to do it. You are not shaking things up massively. They've already gone out and said that they didn't want to move Evan Mobley. We know they're not moving Donovan. Harden's coming back on a new deal, which is everything we've been laid out to for the early news today. So your only other option is trade Jared Allen. And I don't think they're going to like a lot of the deals they get back for Jared Allen. So you have to find a way to get better through minor trades and through free agency. This is one of the better moves. This is what you should be paying attention to if you're Kobe Altman. So, I mean, yes, don't go up in arms, but at least acknowledge the fact that if you're going to sit here and move on from a guy, especially like Max Strus, and say, hey, I'm going to turn that into Jonathan Kuminga. I'm going to make a difference on the roster. I'm going to bring in somebody that does something different. Then I think that's a reason for Cavs fans to be excited. But bring me a different product. That is my biggest thing heading from last year into this year. You brought in James Harden for Darius Garland. I still seemed like I was watching almost the exact same team. I was watching a team who doesn't give a high enough effort level on defense. I was watching a team that when they get into the playoffs, all of a sudden can't shoot the basketball well enough and don't rise up in the big moments. So give me flexibility. Give me a different way to play basketball. Give somebody to provide a little bit of energy into the room. I don't know if that's Jonathan Kuminga, but at least it's different. Like, I'm sure he wasn't innocent in the entire Golden State debacle either. But at least it's different. That is the big thing this offseason. Do something different. You have done the same thing for 4 years running. I need to see a different product out on the floor, and this is a step towards that. 216-474-0092. Would Jonathan Kuminga excite you at all as an addition for the Cavs? Plus, coming up here in 5 minutes, we're going to get to the most pressing things said by our station's guest today with the Station Buzz. It's Overtime with Jake Volnick with you guys on The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ethan Sands joining us coming up here at 8 o'clock. We'll talk to him about all things Cavs. Jonathan Kuminga, James Harden, LeBron, all the good stuff. Again, coming up at 8 o'clock with Ethan. But we got more to cover, more to get to, and a lot of things being said across today on multiple different topics. Let's go ahead and take a listen to the most pressing things said by our station's guest today with the Station Buzz. All right, let's kick things off. Joe DeLeon on with Afternoon Drive of A to Z Sports, as he is every single Monday. And he was asked by JP and Spencer today, which is more likely, Shador starting or him being traded?
I feel like he's got a better chance of starting because I just don't really... Who's going to trade for Shador Sanders right now? I just don't think that anybody looks at Shador Sanders and sees him as a proven commodity that is worth bringing into their quarterback room, unless there is some situation where there's like a devastating injury to a starter. And I don't even think anyone really trade for Shador Sanders to be a replacement starter. It's just like if somebody enters a circumstance where their quarterback room ends up being thin and they need a backup. But at the end of the day, Shador Sanders still has a lot to prove. I also think that generally, as we saw during his draft class, I think that the NFL, a lot of teams maybe don't want to take on the distraction and the coverage that he gets for a backup quarterback. I think at the end of the day, he's probably more likely that he steps onto the field as a starter at some point this year. Probably not week one, but at some point this year, then somebody trading for him, because there's just not a whole lot of value there unless somebody was really, really desperate.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because we talked about it, I think it was last week, about the idea of Shador being traded and how I can see the avenue to it making sense. Right? Like, if you just don't believe Shador is going to be your quarterback of the future, then you think you can get even a fourth round pick out of him. If you're Andrew Berry playing the value game, that works and that makes sense. But it's so interesting when we talk about the actual prospects of Shador and being like, oh, we don't want to take him because of the baggage that comes with him, the personality and character issues, maybe in some of his interviews, and clearly don't think he's that great of a quarterback. And then a year, he turns around, plays seven games for the Browns, a lot of those in which he has no offensive line in front of him, can't display a whole lot, a couple of games that look really bad, and now all of a sudden teams are flipping and being like, yeah, let us go get Shador. Come on, let us go trade for him. That's who we want. Like, it does seem so odd to me, and obviously I'm very much in the camp and in the boat of keep Shador on the field, start him week one, go out and see what he has. I think that's the best thing this team can do. Again, I can still see the pathway where if you're Andrew Berry, if you really don't believe in Shador, which, I mean, to be your franchise quarterback, I think you can believe in him to make a couple starts for you in the NFL, make sure that things aren't very bad, and you can trust it at this rate. I think you can trust him to get you through a 17-game season. I don't know that you really trust him to be your quarterback of the franchise, like of the future. You don't think he's probably going to be your answer if you're Andrew Berry, but I think you at least owe it to yourself to give it an opportunity, give it a shot. Like, what do you have to lose? It is a fourth round pick, which is probably all you're getting back. I can't imagine a team actually giving up a third round pick for Shador. I don't think that's happening right now. But even if we're sitting and looking at a fourth round pick, is that really more valuable than even the slim chance that you have your answer at quarterback and you used a fifth round pick on him and you have all of next year to use two first round picks on making the team better, to use your second round pick, your 2028 first round pick, all on making the team better around the quarterback? It just feels like a very high-risk, low-reward type of game to play, and not one that I understand in the slightest if Andrew Berry wants to play it. Just go put the young quarterback on the field, give him an opportunity to go do something for you, and don't get in your head, don't get in your own way, let the season play out. Again, if you want to start Deshaun, wouldn't be my pathway to moving forward, but okay, sure, have fun with it. Go start Deshaun, see if he can be your quarterback, but at some point, you got to have somebody in that room. You're not trusting Taylen Green right now. You're not trusting Dylan Gabriel. There really is no other quarterback that you're going and searching out that is sitting on the open market that you can actually go out and get. You just keep both quarterbacks there and have them ready to roll. All right, Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com, on with Baskin and Phelps today. And he had some reasons for the Browns' offense and the outlook to be optimistic.
If they get average quarterback play, they could win 8 or 9 games. Because I do think the roster has a potential to win those kind of games. And I think they answered some questions this offseason and addressed the biggest areas of weakness, which were the offensive line. And I think it will be better just because it's younger and I expect it to stay healthy, or healthier than the group the last 2 years did. So I think we will see an improvement in the offensive line. I can't say if it'll be how significant that will be, but I think the offensive line will be better. I feel the same way about the receivers. Now, these rookies have to continue to progress and have to have a quick impact, right, for this receiving core to make a huge jump, which it needs to make. But I think Isaiah Bond is going to be better than he was as a rookie. I think Jerry Jeudy is going to have whatever type of bounce back. I don't know if he's going to be 2024 Jerry Jeudy, but I think he's going to be better than he was last year. So I think there is optimism on that side of the ball. But you need your quarterback to play well and not turn it over and to get the ball to these guys, right, and to take advantage of the improvements around him. And that's a huge question mark.
I really don't know that I sit here and think that, like, and I agree with a lot of the things that Scott is saying. I just don't know that I agree with the mark of, if you get average quarterback play, I think you can be better than an 8-9 football team. I really do. Like, you take a look around at the standings that, I mean, just occur every single year in the NFL. The Steelers are a 10-win football team, and yes, they had Aaron Rodgers. I don't think Aaron Rodgers delivered you much more than average, you know, quarterback play last year. He was not fantastic. It's not like he was managing a bunch of games to put them into a great situation. He was, I mean, essentially helping the team survive. He was playing along with the Mike Tomlin effect. I mean, you turn around, like, the Jaguars, I do not think were a stacked roster and were an extremely young roster that was getting around average to slightly above average quarterback play out of Trevor Lawrence. They won 13 games. Like, if you're capping me out at 8 or 9, like, I think average quarterback play can take you probably not much farther. Can it bring you to a 10-win season? Could it bring you to 11-win? Again, a lot of that's still left to be played out. You do have to see what you get out of guys like Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston. But I think on paper, I look at a lot of these teams and think, yeah, Browns are pretty much on par talent-wise with where they're at. I look at some of the 8 and 9 teams in equivalence last year, and I think the Browns aren't that far off, if their rookies look good this year, of where that's at. I just think your ceiling gets a lot higher. Again, I don't know that you're getting average quarterback play. I certainly would not be betting on it. I think that's a really high bar for this team, and you're banking on a lot out of Shador or a really nice bounce back out of Deshaun. But I think if you are able to get to that spot, a lot of the other things around here have, I mean, fell into place fairly nicely. We talk about that offensive line, as did Scott, and it's like, you turn around, guys, better offensive line play? I mean, we might be able to field an offensive line from 92.3 The Fan and get the exact same product the Browns got out there last year. I mean, I got a shot. Listen, between me, Ken, and Nick, we make a decent offensive line, all right? You got bodies in there. I mean, we might only be good for half a drive, but we got bodies in there. You have a fighter's chance is the point. That offensive line is going to be better. I'm just not sure I'd put a ceiling on this year. Well, again, it's not going to be a Super Bowl. I just don't know that I'd cap it at 8 or 9 wins. Guardians in action, but Peter Appel, Just Baseball, on with Afternoon Drive today and was talking about the team and what they could be looking at to go after during the trade deadline.
They'll be the same type of Guardians that we normally see at the deadline, where if the right player is available, they will pounce. And I actually have 3 different options that I think the Guardians should go after. You know, there's kind of a low to high in terms of a price range for the 3. And in my opinion, I think they should go after an outfielder. If I was Cleveland, I would be calling the Cincinnati Reds and asking about J.J. Bleda and Spencer Steer. J.J. Bleda is your cheapest option. He signed a 1-year, $1.4 million deal this offseason, and he's really burst out and had an incredible season. So that's your cheap option. The middle option is Spencer Steer, because he can also play first base. He also has 13 home runs. He's slugging about .420 right now. And then the top option, not really a power guy, but just a really good baseball player, is Jungwoo Lee of the San Francisco Giants. He fits the identity of the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a lot of guys of interest. The outfield gets really interesting for me, though, because we're sitting here right now and you say, okay, well, you feel confident they're going to play Chase DeLauder. That is going to be a staple in the lineup. You're not going to have to worry about that. They're not moving on from him. Doesn't really feel like they're in a scenario where they want to move on from Stephen Kwan, continue to give him opportunities. I mean, heck, we just saw the guy bat leadoff over the weekend. And now you're looking at, like, Khalil Watson's playing okay. You have a couple of guys to rotate. Like, I'm not opposed to going out and getting an outfielder. If you're going to do it, I would appreciate if you went out and actually got a power bat. Like, I don't need another contact hitter playing in the outfield. Give me a little bit of power from the position. Spencer Steer is interesting. I just don't know those are the type of players I see the Guardians actually pouncing and going after. Like, I just don't see that being the way they line up. It always feels like it's cheap power bat. Go out and find a guy on the cheap that can hit some home runs, and we'll add power to the lineup on a regular basis. Switch out the DH, switch out a guy playing left field, right field, whatever it takes. And, or they're just going to sit there and basically do absolutely nothing. Those feel like the 2 spots that you're kind of sitting in. All right, last one. Matt Derry, Derry Bros Guardians cast on this morning. And he talked about the Guardians and trying to just keep their head afloat with all the injuries they have.
You've got to stay afloat. I mean, you just got to stay around playing 500 baseball without Jose and Angel Martinez and then hopefully make a run here, because it just, like you said, the schedule's been a little bit grueling. They hadn't won a series in a while, and yesterday's win was just enormous. Yeah, I'll be interested in seeing how they respond tonight and bounce back after yesterday, because yesterday was an emotional win, like you said, and a grind. And I mentioned before, Kwan and Manzardo got to get going. Mm-hmm. They just have to. I'm stunned at the fall of Stephen Kwan from basically a year ago today to now, just in terms of hard hit rate and driving the baseball. It's just not there. And Manzardo got pinch hit for yesterday. So those guys have got to wake up.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of guys in the lineup, obviously, that have not lived up to expectations. Matt laid out, a fair two of them right there. And, it's the right approach. We've been saying this. It is keep your head above water. It's stay afloat in some way of just you have to survive while Jose's not there and while you're missing Angel, while you're missing the water back now. But they haven't really done that. Again, this is the time of year where you need guys to start to step up, play into form. Really haven't gotten out of Stephen Kwan. You haven't gotten out of Kyle Manzardo. I mean, at some point, you have to take a step back and start to consider the idea of these guys got to pretty much put up or shut up, right? Like, there are so many guys that you traded for, that you have given a long leash to, like Kwan, like Manzardo, that it's really nice to sit here and try to let them develop. But at some point, you have to play, and you have to show up to the games. Neither guy has done a great job at that, especially this year. And I think patience probably should be run a little bit thin. All right, that'll do it for the Station Buzz. Again, we're going to react to the Guardians later on tonight when they're wrapped up over at Progressive Field. But coming up here in about 5 minutes, Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com, going to help us break down all things Cavs in the early offseason right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.